Abby.
And I'm Allie.
And it's
About Time for True Crime.
Hi.
Hey.
Welcome to About Time for True Crime, your favorite true crime podcast.
Thank you, guys. You shouldn't have.
Ugh, and yet you did. Thank you.
Thank you.
How are you doing? How's your week?
How
are things?
Yeah, are you listening in the car?
Are you listening in your AirPods, you little hottie?
Okay. Are you at the grocery store and nobody knows that you're listening to something, but we're in your ears? You're like,
what time of day is it? Ooh.
You getting ready? Are you taking your makeup off? Are you putting it on? What's going on?
Are you lacing up your shoes for a run like a true psychopath listening to CJ?
Yeah, some true crime as you go outside into the world. That's terrifying.
Spooky.
Spoops.
Oh my gosh, the other night I was watching, like, you know, crime series or whatever.
As you do.
And I was home alone and I just kept getting these incessant phone calls and I was very annoyed. Like, it was like spam, obviously. I didn't need to answer it, but I couldn't block the fucking number. So I'm just watching, and at some point I had to go and take a shower and I was like, I need a cooler. I was like, I know that this phone number isn't a problem and the crime documentaries I'm watching have been done yet.
Yes.
I will have New Girl in the background. Thank you.
Yes. I need something to cleanse the mental palate here.
Yes. Oh, you guys, what are your cooler shows? What are your comfort shows? What do you put on when you need to be distracted?
Yeah,
from
my,
the terrors.
My reprieve shows. It used to be The Office for me. Now it's like hard for me to watch because it's on Peacock and it has commercials. And I worked so hard to not have commercials and pay for Hulu and everything else and all the other things. And I'm not paying for Peacock if there's like a premium version of that.
No.
I do not have that.
Nope.
So I'm on to What We Do in the Shadows, which I've always loved anyway, but
fucking
it's not
fucking guy,
but it is not a show that I grew up with, so it's not that kind of comfort show like The Office was.
Yeah, I hear you.
So it's a different kind of love.
I get that. It's fair. It's also a very similar format, I feel like, to The Office. It's like if
it
The Office was just
vampires
in modern day.
Correct.
Yeah,
but that allowed swearing.
Oh, delightful.
So yeah, tell us that. In true crime news.
Yes. Alec Baldwin.
Yeah.
Well, I guess we won't need a part two because his case was dismissed.
Yeah, if you guys remember way back when, Abby gave us sort of like a summary of what happened on the set of Rust, and then recently they've dismissed the charges against him. So I think that's where it'll stop for him. I don't know if they're moving forward with any of the other players in that case, but at least for him, he can sort of move on, which watching the footage of that, he looked very happy to do that. So
yes, and hopefully that leads to some extra peace. I couldn't help but feel glad putting myself in his shoes if I did something like that unknowingly. To have someone else recognize that for me would be such a relief. So
certainly been a long time, I think, since everything happened to now to carry that and having that weighing on you. But isn't he gonna have a reality TV show too?
Oh, is he?
I saw something about him. They're gonna, like, it's literally gonna be like a Baldwin's TV show and it's gonna be in his house.
Wild.
With him and his wife. And I'm like, isn't he the one that left like these god awful voicemails on his like daughter's phone?
Oh,
wife's
probably
phone or whatever. He was like a complete douche. He was mean.
Your Honor, my client's been a real D-bag. Thanks.
Your Honor, my client's a Gemini. He couldn't help it.
He's pleading Gemini. It's in his first house, okay? No, I just feel like I refuse to learn anything else about celebrities. Like, as little as I can learn about them, I'm like,
I think we're better for it when we do that.
Yeah. Let your heroes be heroes. Don't learn.
Yeah. We don't really have to meet them.
No.
Sometimes.
No.
Mostly.
And most of the time when people are like, I met my hero, it was a real disappointment.
Yep.
And I've had enough bummers.
Yeah.
So I'm just not gonna, you know?
Yeah. Best to sit one out every once in a while.
But that was our true crime news. In other news, at the time that this releases, next week is a pretty big deal.
Yeah, it's National Night Out next Tuesday, so whoop, August 6th, which we've talked about it a little bit in recent cases, too. When we talked about Megan Kanka, her community kind of came together because, again, she went missing in July.
Yeah.
And she was murdered in July. And so when everybody sort of came together for her, it was actually National Night Out when they wore pink for her and when they left their lights on outside. And it's really like it's a community event. It's like a community, law enforcement, a bunch of other services like come out. It's never just law enforcement, but
firefighters, first responders,
all different kinds of things come together. It's usually held at like a field or a rec center or something like that, some local park, and there's usually like snacks and activities for kids, and just depends on your community. Everyone kind of sets it up different for what they want to do, but if your community is setting up anything, go check it out and see what's going on.
First of all, there's normally a lot of cool resources, and at least for me, the last time I went, there was a ton I didn't even know about, and I work in social work. Like, I work getting people those resources, so that was cool. But also, if that's not motivation enough, they normally have snacks and goodies, so...
So check it out.
Haven't you ever wanted another Livestrong bracelet? Because they'll have those.
That's all I'm saying. I'm just saying, check it out. What's the worst that can happen? You don't like it? Go home.
Go with someone you can kind of laugh at people with.
That's
it. People watch and then walk around.
Yeah.
But anyway, so that's exciting.
Yeah. In other news, my kitten, who is now a cat, Oliver, you guys remember we adopted this little shit last fall. I love him dearly. He has decided that the water in the water bowl should no longer be in the water bowl. It should instead be all over our floor. And he likes to scoop the water out. He just sticks his feet in the water, which is not fair to our other cat, Mia, because why should she have to drink his dirty feet water, in my opinion?
It's more of a fish than a cat, really.
He wants to frolic and play.
He does.
But then the other thing he does, because we have this big water fountain that stores a lot of water in it. It's got like a nice reservoir in it, which I thought was a good thing. Now he's like a fucking physicist and rocks it. Like he, and it gets momentum, and then he like slams it down because he wants the water to spill out to play. So then it does, and it spills like probably half a gallon across.
Should we just get you guys like a kiddie pool? Like not like a child pool, like a kiddie pool.
I have filled the sink in one of our bathrooms to just let him play in it, and he's like, no, I want it's it to be same. On the floor. I've done the tub, I've done all of it, so I don't know what to do. If anybody has any ideas of a cat who doesn't let you leave the water in the dish, which has just recently become a problem.
Yeah.
Mia is probably thirsty.
Jackson Galaxy, we need you.
I know. So that's in my news. But other than that.
Well, speaking of cat news. So I recently moved and my cat just got a cat wall.
I love that.
Which, yes, he is spoiled rotten and a bougie little brat, but he loves it. My partner has put up all of these things and it's so funny. They're like, yep, I put up a cat wall for my stepson. Like,
yes.
But they were putting it up and Newton, my cat, he's a terror. So he was trying to get up on all of them, but they have like these little round pegs up to the different platforms that he can like scratch on and hop up and down like steps. He keeps wrapping his entire body around it like it's a donut. And getting freaked out. And I'm like, you're doing this. Now what? You didn't like slip and fall. Like you wrapped yourself around and now you're stressed out.
Come on, guy.
But he's been taking the move well. I think it helps that he's getting some toys. So a little bribery never hurt.
He hasn't dragged his ass across your bed yet?
Not yet.
All right, we'll see.
But he is afraid of the sound of the washer and dryer.
Who isn't?
Yeah, that's fair.
Who liked it, honestly?
He Not did I. get really freaked out by the central air, which I love, but it is a new sound for him.
Oh, spoiled buddy.
Yeah. But that's all that's really new for us here.
Well, that is good because I have one hell of a case for you today.
I'm so excited.
It is, well, let me put it this way. I have about 13 pages in front of me. One of those pages is all sources of my research. So I did one hell of a deep dive.
Yeah, you did.
But I got into this one and there was a lot available on it.
Okay.
Sometimes you run into an issue where there's just not.
Right.
And that wasn't the case with this one. And after getting out of Al Capone and talking about 100 years ago, I wanted to choose something very recent. And so the case that we're actually covering happened in 2020.
Wow. Very recent then.
So recent enough where there's a lot of information, but it's been enough time where the facts of the case, it's been settled.
Right.
And those things have now been released.
Ooh, okay. I'm so excited.
So if you were skipping, stop skipping.
Yoo-hoo!
Pod's on. Today we're going to actually talk about the case of Amy Harwick. Amy was a lot of things. And if I had the opportunity to talk with her, I think we could get a bottle of wine, down it, be settled on the couch, and talk for hours. I think she and I have such different interests, but I think that we would have a million and one things to talk about.
Oh, yeah.
Amy eventually earned her PhD in human sexuality and actually owned a private practice as a sex therapist.
Oh, good for her.
And became famous accidentally.
Okay.
We're going to get into all of that later, but Amy was also the victim of a vicious crime that ended her life far before her time. And this is a reminder to all of us to be vigilant about our safety and the safety of our friends.
Yes.
A few things drew me to Amy's case. The first is I get to say this sentence. Drew Carey was, of course, looked into, but no, he didn't actually kill her.
I love that sentence.
I didn't think you'd hear that today.
And the points are made up and so are the charges. Here we go. Whose murder is it anyway?
If my grandmother were alive, she probably would have sat up for that one.
Ooh.
Her beloved The Price is Right host, Drew, oh my Carey. Goodness. But in seriousness, what did draw me to her case was how interesting I found her.
Okay.
I think Amy and I would have less in common than we would have in common. And I think that we would have vastly differing opinions on a lot of things. I don't think we'd actually agree on a lot. And I think that that's what can make friendships and conversations so rich and fruitful. If she and I were to have met at a bar or worked in similar circles, or if we were closer in age and if Amy just hadn't been murdered, I think we'd have actually been friends with endless things to talk about. And I think you at home might actually feel this way too. So Amy was born May 20th, 1981. She spent a brief period in foster care. I don't know the circumstances of her earliest years, but we do know that she was adopted. And my understanding is that the Harwicks adopted her. So for all intents and purposes, these were the only parents that she knew. These are her parents. Tom and Penny Harwick raised Amy alongside her brother in a small town in Pennsylvania called Sellersville.
Okay.
Which was just outside of Philly. When she was at school, she dressed in dark clothes, she wore dark makeup, and she was more of a goth emo kid than anything.
Oh, we would have been friends, me and her.
Her crowd was not the typical popular kids, if you will. Sharon Little, Amy's classmate, remembers hiding out in the bathroom crying after receiving news of a friend passing away. She and Amy did not know each other, but they did both used to do their makeup in the bathroom at school. And when Amy saw her crying, she didn't say anything. She just embraced her. Sharon said, "She saw me crying and she just held me." Amy was such a caring, loving, and kind person with a heart of gold. But she didn't feel that she really fit in her small Pennsylvania town. And it wasn't because those people weren't also caring, loving, and kind. But the things that she was interested in, she didn't find anybody else like her. And she wanted a change. She was metal and angsty, but not in the shy, reclusive way that you might think. She was vibrant and outgoing with so much to give, but she needed a change.
Right.
She thought that if she moved to LA, she'd be around people more like her. And she actually had a friend that had moved out there before who talked about how much they enjoyed it, so she figured that sounds really great. It was joked about among her friends that Amy moved to LA to make friends and to get an education, but she became famous by accident. After all, it is the reason that a lot of people flock to LA. Most pack their bags and they head there with dreams of seeing their names in lights.
True.
But Amy wasn't looking for that. She wanted to put herself through school. She graduated high school in 99 in Pennsylvania, but in 2001, she did move to LA. She got an undergrad degree from California Polytech University and then her master's in clinical psych.
Wow, okay.
Amy was very hardworking. She wanted to pay her way through school herself. She didn't want to ask anybody for money, and it didn't seem like she wanted to take out loans either. So she was pretty much a workhorse. She had so many random interests and like cool skills, and coupled with her absolutely drop-dead gorgeous appearance, made her really successful at finding gig work.
Okay.
So she pretty much paid cash for her master's
and yes, then queen.
Later her PhD.
Amy
was beautiful. It shouldn't matter, but she was. So that you have a visual, Amy was a thin brunette, beautiful face, dark eyes, long lashes, striking smile, very fair skin, long, dark, nearly black hair, fair skin with lipstick gave her like this almost pinup 40s starlet look.
Wow.
Depending on how she did her hair and makeup, she could look like a corporate badass or vintage boudoir. Who, me? Could be any of it. She had range. And modeling agencies knew it. To pay the bills and put herself through school, she utilized her many talents, one of them being modeling. She did all kinds of modeling. She posed for Playboy. And I'm not talking rinky-dink, like they hung a sheet up in an alleyway and chained smoked cigarettes between takes modeling. I mean, she got in with legitimate talent groups and was scouted.
No, if she's in Playboy, she's at least around all of the big names in those industries.
And she didn't move to LA to say, I want to go be a Playboy model.
Right. Which some people do, and that's their whole dream. And she's just, what, doing this on the side?
Exactly.
Holy shit.
She also moonlighted as a bartender at upscale parties in Hollywood. And this is where the celebrities partied. These were A-listers, the who's who around. And, I mean, she wasn't invited as a guest. This wasn't like she was also an A-lister, but she was working it. But this gave her connections that obviously she wouldn't have had otherwise.
Right.
She was also a professional dancer. She was a go-go dancer. So she was performing on the side. And she had a fire act where she would literally swallow fire.
What?
Like, you know those things where they can like stick the fire down their throat? She did that. She could do that too.
She can do everything. Holy shit.
For as much time as she spent around alcohol, Amy didn't drink. And she didn't do drugs, and she really didn't do anything like that. It was just the lifestyle that she led.
Wow.
Sometimes she'd be working the bar, and others she'd be walking around handing out drinks while wearing heels that I, and most definitely you, would break an ankle in. But she did it with ease. And it wasn't that she wanted to do that forever, but she was also having fun. She was putting in the work behind the scenes to get where she wanted to be. But she was earning cash. She was earning good money. She wasn't doing anything that she didn't want to do. She didn't feel forced to do it. But the things that she were doing were things that people pack up and leave to go do.
Yeah.
And she did that to make ends meet. Not that she was struggling, but she did that as a means to an end, not because this was her end goal. And I find that very interesting. I think that's really cool.
I mean, that I think adds a lot of depth to her character, but also just shows what a range she had.
She was also just super bubbly and lively. So people were just drawn to her and drawn to watching her.
Yeah.
And this presence that she had also made her successful and also made her a lot of money.
I'm sure.
invited to the parties. She was invited to perform at these really big events. And it gave her, again, access to people that she wouldn't have otherwise met. But she wasn't looking for it. She became famous among those crowds, or at least her name was known, and she was making friends. She was spoken of often. She was the beautiful, bubbly model who was the go-go dancer, performer, model, but what she really wanted to do was be a therapist and help people.
I love that.
This was all just to pay the bills. And the funny part is that some would have given anything to have the opportunity to do the things that she just did on the side.
Right, exactly.
But there's so much more to Amy than this. We're going to go into her professional life in a minute, but she had so many varying, diverse interests and hobbies that I would just love to sit and talk with her about if I had the chance. She was interested in the macabre. She kept weird things in formaldehyde-filled jars.
What?
Around her house.
Amazing.
She was very into taxidermy. Ooh. So she had a lot of taxidermy animals around her house, which I have none of that and won't.
But no. Power to her.
We wouldn't agree on that, but it's like, it was so her. She had an albino deer head in her bedroom.
And an albino deer head.
Correct.
In her bedroom.
You heard me.
There's so much to unpack in that one piece of information.
Oh, and she was really proud of it. I heard her talk about it in a podcast. I'll have the name of the podcast and the sources too, but she joked about it that she was the friend that would drag all the other friends to the cemetery to have fun. Like, that was her idea of a night out, was like, let's go hang out at a cemetery.
Wait, I like that though. I like that. I just don't want to hang out at the cemetery of the taxidermied animals.
Well, then don't go to Amy's.
Okay, she can come to mine then. Cool.
She also loved horror movies and music, especially heavy metal music. It was said that she was just as comfortable in a mosh pit as she was dancing to the Beach Boys with her mom.
Amazing.
She started to enjoy photography, where she had previously spent so much time in front of the camera as a model. She had actually started switching gears to behind the camera. She wanted to practice that craft as well. She wanted to kind of see how she could do on the other side of things, but she just wanted to learn and grow and pick up these other hobbies. It wasn't like she was going to not model anymore. It was just that she was going to do that and also take her own pictures. So
right,
it just seemed like along the way she was absorbing all of these new things that she was learning how to do, but she wasn't giving anything up. And right. I thought that was really cool that she could balance all of that, because I think that a lot of people would struggle with that.
Yeah, of course.
Amy was the only one of her family to move out west. The rest still lived in Pennsylvania, not far outside of Pittsburgh.
Right.
So because of this, when they did all get together, it was an event. And they called it CBD, Cookie Baking Day.
Okay, that's very cute. Did they put any CBD in their CBD?
I have to imagine they did, but it did not say that. A lot of this information is actually from her obituary, so I don't imagine they'd put that detail there.
That sounds fair.
But that they, of course, baked cookies. It was Cookie Baking Day, but they also made a ton of other foods. And this get-together would be like her parents and her brother and aunts and uncles and cousins and nieces and nephews. It was so much more than just the food.
Right. You know, of course.
I think we do so much where we get together to eat, but we get together and eat. There's so much fruitful conversation and so many sentimental memories made around a dinner table or standing against a counter with a plate in your hand.
Oh my gosh, yes. The wall lean.
Yeah.
One of my favorite poses, if I do say so myself.
But even though she moved out there and even though she was literally on the other side of the country from where she grew up and she had made this sort of new name for herself, if you will, it wasn't like she threw her family to the wayside. She still made time to do that wherever she could. And that's also super important. But anyway, on to her professional and educational life. After her undergrad degree, Amy earned her master's in clinical psychology.
Love.
The story is that armed with her graduate degree, and I believe already licensed, she applied for a job in a corrections facility, but after an anonymous party sent the hiring panel some photos from her Playboy shoot, she was not offered the job.
Rude.
I don't know if this is the one and only reason that she didn't get the job. I don't know if that was something that they could tell her, but it said that this was the point where she decided to take her career in an entirely new direction. And this is where she decided to focus on sexuality as a whole.
Okay.
So she went back to school, and this is where she earned her PhD in human sexuality and incorporated this into her own practice. So she offered individual and family therapy, and also offered sex therapy.
Okay.
Now, to my understanding, this was talk therapy. Obviously, there's ethics and boundaries and professionalism in this, so please don't take sex therapy as something that it is not. I will have sources listed if you want to learn more about it. We'll talk a little bit about it in a minute. Some of Amy's patients would be meeting with her for entirely different reasons. Some would find out that she's a sex therapist and feel more comfortable discussing that with her down the road. Maybe they weren't ready to get there just yet.
Yeah.
Each patient was different, of course. Some met with her exclusively for sex therapy. And sex therapy could include couples therapy regarding intimacy, communication and sex included. It could be individual counseling, discussions about kinks and boundary setting with partners, dealing with shame and guilt, or about sexual identity. Sometimes it's coupled with trauma therapy to address past trauma and so much more. So again, there'll be links if you want to learn more about it, but the goal is to help the patient work on mental or emotional aspects of sex-related issues, and it sounds broad because it is.
Yeah.
In Amy's case, her private practice was very successful. Her skill set was very diverse, and remember, she's already made quite a name for herself on the side. So
right.
She's doing podcasts, and she's doing speaking engagements. She actually taught classes at local schools on sex therapy and sex education in general. She traveled to China to teach a sex education class to women who had never had it before.
Holy cow.
She said that as she was earning her psych degree, there was like a credit in human sexuality that she needed as a prerequisite.
Okay.
So she was blown away by that and blown away at how little her mental health colleagues and her needed to know about sex education in general to get their licenses, because it's such a big part of life. It is the foundation of life. It's the root of life. And yet she didn't feel like they got accurate or adequate education in that to be able to help people. And so she just went back to school to do that, essentially learn all of the things that she could.
I think that's so good. And it's so important for any sort of practicing therapists to have a really good understanding of what happens, because you can have a client who has mostly overcome a sex trauma from when they were 11 and it's coming up when they're 33 and you're like, well, I thought you already worked through that. And it's like, you can work on it. But most of the times when there's big trauma or there's something that gets in the way of intimacy like that in any vicinity, whatever that looks like, you're going to probably end up talking about it because that's going to cause some friction in someone's life.
Yeah. I mean, I think that having a provider that's well-versed in all of those things, like, you obviously they're going to need to be very well-versed and trained in trauma therapy, but also having that others like sex education in general is going to be important, and talking about intimacy and how to be okay with that in future relationships, because right. It's about healing from the past and being best prepared for the future. How can I live my best life now and a better life later?
I love that. Yeah, you know? So important. And kudos to her for having her hat in all of these rings, I guess, and still being able to sort of zoom back out to the greater picture of like, this is my life and how I'm interacting in all of these circumstances. This is something I'd like to see work better for other people too.
Mm-hmm. The issue was, though, because of the fame that she had and because of her risque, if you will, focus in her field, and she didn't have as many colleagues as you'd think in that sex therapist field. It was kind of taboo, if you could imagine. She attracted a lot of clientele that wanted to work on themselves for the right reasons, which was great, but she also got a lot of patients that wanted to meet with her just so they could be in a room with her, and she's beautiful and had budding fame, and they got to be in a room with her for an hour and talk about sex.
Yeah.
So she attracted all kinds, and that became increasingly difficult for her to kind of weed through the patients that wanted to do well and those who just wanted to say they met with her.
Right.
But speaking of attracting all kinds, and she did, let's talk about Amy's dating history.
Okay.
And I promise I'm bringing it up because it's important. One boyfriend in particular that we have to talk about is Gareth Pursehouse.
Gareth.
And what a weird Gareth Pursehouse. Pursehouse. Purse?
House. Squish them together.
Pursehouse.
Gareth. Gareth Pursehouse seems like a nightmare for kids who had to go through speech therapy as much as I did.
See, I feel like Gareth Pursehouse needs to be Gareth Pursehouse the third.
Yeah. But there's got to be another th to even it out.
But it would just suck that there would have been two others.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Anyway.
Rip. Anyway.
Gareth was a photographer, but he also full-time was a software engineer. So he was very well-versed in computers.
So definitely a computer expert then if he has software engineering in his resume.
Yes.
Okay.
But he and Amy actually met on set for a shoot that she was modeling for, and the two hit it off. The relationship between Gareth and Amy seemed to have actually been going well in the beginning, and of course it did. It right. has to go well in the beginning, or
it doesn't.
It's
start.
Also the end, you know, it yeah. doesn't go anywhere from there. They met on set in about 2009. They'd likely crossed paths before that a couple of times before on different shoots, but they finally actually got to talking, and he found her fascinating, brilliant, and beautiful, and she found him charming and dorky and unlike the usual musicians that she'd usually dated in the past.
Okay.
He Love was, that. Again, that photographer, computer expert, and aspiring comedian, though the stand-up dream he had seemed to be going nowhere fast.
Got it. Okay.
While Amy could seemingly try her hand at anything and be successful, Gareth's attempts at stand-up were painful.
Oh.
The kind of painful that, if you were there, you'd probably feel the secondhand embarrassment that I do when I see that. I can't let the moment hang. It lasts too long. I need to fill in the silence, or to make it better, or make a joke, or to cover it up. I don't like to see somebody drowning. If there's three of us and somebody makes it awkward, I will try to save it.
Yeah.
I can disagree with everything they said. I can whatever, and I will like process that later. But in the moment, I do not want to feel awkward. I can't let it hang.
Yeah.
I just can't. And if someone's on stage, man, you are drowning there all on your own. And that's really, it's just, it's uncomfortable in the whole room when you see somebody just like mess up like that up there.
Yes.
Anyway, friends noticed that they saw less of Amy when she was dating him.
Okay.
And when they did see her, there always seemed to be some issue going on with Gareth. He was insanely jealous. If a man spoke to Amy, he would have to approach them quickly and make out with her in front of him to assort his dominance, if you'd call it that.
Is he a middle school girl?
Basically.
With her first crush on Brent and Ashley's talking to him?
What he lacked in confidence, he made up for in ego.
Oh, I'm sure.
Because he thought he was great to be around. But I think he was the only one that thought that.
Isn't that just how it goes?
This relationship lasted 2 years.
Wow.
But during these 2 years, he had choked her, hit Ooh. Her, punched her with a closed fist.
And I'm assuming this is not consensually within boundaries of a sex life. This is...
No.
For his ego's sake.
This was abuse.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah.
He left marks and bruises, and Amy might have thought that she could change him or save him, but after 2 years and too many bruises, she ended the relationship. But he wouldn't take no for an answer, and he wouldn't leave her alone. According to an article from People, Amy's friend Rudy Torres was quoted as describing Gareth as a stalker. When they broke up, he didn't take it well at all. He'd do stupid stuff and say stupid stuff. You'd tell him, move on, dude, leave her alone, and he wouldn't. And I have to say, Gareth, again, not that it matters, but if you're getting a visual, he's an attractive guy.
Right.
He is, he's tall, tan, and handsome. He's probably got a six pack. He's got like this long, light brown hair. He's got a jawline that could kill a bitch. She's got a nice smile. He also could be a model. It's not like she's this beautiful specimen and he's this like cloaked goblin
Gremlin,
in the corner that like scurries out at night for
and
food.
Makes bad jokes.
Yeah, like it's a shame that he behaved the way that he did, because I think in a photo they would have looked beautiful. And I think that her being the model and him being the photographer and her having an interest in photography later, like they could have had a lot of shared interests and done a lot together and had a lot of fun quality time and
right.
you know, had everything about his personality been different.
Yeah, if he was just a different person.
Yeah. If you had just taken his face and put it on a good person, then it would have been great, right?
Phenomenal. Or, you know, actually took care of whatever mental health is very clearly debilitating his life.
Yes. The mental health be mental healthing.
Yes.
But the issue was that with friends, they were like, you know, leave her alone, dude. And I think they kind of thought that way too, where it was like, you can have anybody, like, you can date somebody else. You know, there are other people, there are plenty of people that would date you here. It's not like you would have trouble finding somebody tonight if you wanted to.
Exactly.
And it wasn't that, oh, he only had eyes for Amy and that he was so in love and he adored and cared about her. It was that power and control aggressive piece where he made all of the friends choose.
Yep.
They chose her.
As they should.
He tried to use them to get messages to her when he was blocked. He would start showing up places where she was, where she didn't tell anybody where she was going and she didn't tell him.
Yeah.
And he had a way of knowing. So he started to freak her out.
Yeah. It would freak me the fuck out.
But at first glance, you wouldn't, you know, we have this idea in our head, and we've said it before, where we think we know what a creeper looks like, or we think we know you're a stalker. You have this mental image of what a stalker looks like.
Right. Or how they behave
before
you get to the stalking.
And what they might look like walking down the street. Like, you imagine them, like, slithering or, like, on all fours.
Yeah.
Like, slinking around. But instead, he's a very handsome, attractive, charismatic guy on the outside.
Right.
But Amy moved on with her life because she had to. And she, of course, wanted to.
Right.
It was 2012. She's focusing on her career. And I think by now she had her master's degree. And this is about when she had applied for that job that she didn't get. She either was like earning her master's degree or had it and didn't have her PhD yet. And it was like when she had applied for that job at the corrections facility.
Got it.
And she didn't get it. And then the employer received that anonymous copy of the nude photos from Playboy. And they never really found out who sent it. But I mean, if you asked, anybody would have told you it was Gareth.
Oh, yeah.
And again, him being a computer whiz or computer expert, as they said, they were convinced that either he just knew that she was applying to the job because he'd hacked her computer and could see that. Obviously, they didn't have any kind of thing in common. I mean, he could have got those photos. He probably had them already and could have sent them wherever he wanted. But how could he have known that she was applying to that job at that time? How would he have known how to send the photos anonymously to this particular hiring panel? So it was just the way that it worked out was very odd and
very niche information.
It was very highly suspected that it was him, but we never got confirmation of that. But this is when she sort of switched gears. Of after that experience, she was like, I'm gonna go into human sexuality. And it kind of inspired her to want to like work with sex workers too, because I mean, I don't know if you would consider posing and modeling for Playboy as sex work, but she wanted to go in to help people in that, and either dealing with shame and guilt of that, or getting out of the field, or dealing with the traumas of working in the field and things like that. So,
well, and I can imagine now she has an even more personal account of the ways that doing something that is perfectly benign and legal in many ways can still bite you in the ass, and wanting to help other people in any variety of sex work.
Exactly. She would go away for a few days, come home, and one time she found pictures turned upside down in her apartment.
I hate that.
Which obviously freaked the hell out of her.
Yes.
And then when she went on her computer, like, the whole thing had been wiped, and she was like, there was no way that...
That wasn't a freak accident with the pictures. No.
No, they were physically turned upside down. It was just creepy. Ugh. And Amy had done what she could think of to protect herself, but she was kind of running out of ideas because she figured she just had to focus on moving on. And obviously she didn't love the guy, but she had hoped that with enough time, he'd move on too.
Right.
And that things would kind of even out again. By 2012, the relationship was ended for good. Right, like we said, Amy had actually reportedly dated Dave Navarro, who was the Red Hot Chili Peppers guitarist and host of Ink Masters for many seasons. She did also briefly date Marilyn Manson.
Damn.
For a period.
Aw, throwback to her emo years. Cute.
Amy was not thinking of Gareth any longer, but the same could not be said for him.
Oh, no.
Professionally, Amy was doing amazing. Her private practice was doing well. She still did jobs on the side because it was fun, but she didn't need to. In the mid to late 2010s, podcasts were really taking off.
Hell yeah.
And woohoo, look at us now. Forging our way in an incredibly oversaturated genre is what we're doing now.
Heyo.
But at least we have amazing listeners, right?
Thank you, guys.
At that time, though, Amy was a guest on several podcasts. She also appeared on TV. She was doing speaking engagements. She was guest lecturing in colleges. She actually wrote a hit book in 2014 called The New Sex Bible for Women, The Complete Guide to Sexual Self-Awareness and Intimacy.
Wow.
She was a rock star. So we fast forward to May of 2017.
Okay.
Nearly 5 years after her split with Gareth. This is around the time she'd been dating Marilyn Manson.
Okay.
It was the evening of her birthday.
Happy birthday.
And he stood her up.
Asshole.
They were supposed to go to dinner, and I don't know what it was. He slept through it or didn't call or something, but he like sleeps all day and is up all night, so he didn't wake up in time, and it was like they had dinner plans at like 8.
He's a bat.
I know.
He's nocturnal.
So she went out by herself or with friends or something, but she went out. And hi, girl. They were kind of already on the outs anyway. I think this was the final straw from what I've been able to put together from sources, but she went out. None other than Drew Carey was there.
Okay, Drew.
And the two struck up conversation. She told him that it was her birthday and that she was stood up, and he told her that she needed a better boyfriend.
And he was right.
And by the end of the night, he had her number.
Damn. Okay, he got game.
Their first date was to Disneyland.
What?
And within weeks, Drew said that he was in love.
Wow.
He was telling people at work he was going to marry Amy. He said he just knew how special she was and that she was such a special person in general, but special to him.
Okay.
He had long been self-conscious about his body, but she made him feel sexy and loved and confident in a way that nobody else had before.
Aww.
And she just had this way about her that brought out the best in him. And he knew that she really felt that way about him. There was no wondering. They were just, they were a great couple. And there's this really cute picture of her in front of the castle in Disneyland, like with little ice cream. It's their first date. And he comes back. He's like, I'm going to marry this one. He just knew.
I love that. When you know, you know, you know.
You know? When they met, Drew was 58 and Amy was 35.
Okay.
Putting 23 years between them. Drew Carey could legally vote, join the army, and he did, and get shit-faced at the bar the day Amy was born, for reference. But this worked for them. They were happy. So happy. And actually, Drew Carey was obviously quite famous. I mean, I joke about The Price is Right, and I have very fond memories of watching that with my grandparents, so it's a special spot in my heart for him, I kind of guess, for me. But Drew Carey was a very famous stand-up comedian.
Oh, yeah.
Had his own show, as well as hosted Whose Line Is It Anyway? And fun fact, he did also serve in the Marine Corps, so thank you, sir, for your service.
Oh, yeah, thank you. I had no idea about that part.
Even though you won't hear this, but if you thought that was fun, here's another one. In 1999, in Disney World, Orlando, in the park that was at the time called MGM, that is now Hollywood Studios, Drew Carey had a 12-minute attraction that followed him as an undercover detective. It's since been closed.
But, okay, King.
But it was open for a little bit. So anyway, he had his own little shebang there.
I have lots of fond memories of Whose Line Is It Anyway, way later than I should have been up and far beyond what I knew was even happening. Mm-hmm. And I still thought it was funny. So,
of course, all of this to say, I don't think Drew Carey spends as much time in the center of the spotlight anymore, but his net worth is about $165 million, and that speaks for itself. He's had one hell of a career and has done very well for himself.
And he deserves to kick back if he wants to. Holy crap.
When he and Amy met, they were in different places. She wasn't looking for fame. Again, was she a household name that you or I would have known out here in New England? No. But was she famous among the circles? And I say famous. Was she known? Was she talked about? Could you have known Amy Nicole or Amy Harwick or Dr. Amy Harwick around there? Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially in LA, in that area. Sure. But she wasn't looking for that. But he'd had fame and he'd known fame for decades. He'd known fame very well. But they were in love. He introduced her to the world in the Valentine's Day episode of The Price is Right in 2018. But he introduced her there as his fiance to the millions of viewers at home. Because he had actually recently proposed to her in Paris.
Okay. Romance. So,
Now we're in 2018. Amy and Drew are happy, but fame isn't all it's cracked up to be, and Amy had not moved to LA in search of it, and she was not a fan of it now. While the relationship between them was great when it was just the two of them, when you're famous, it's never just the two of you.
No, it's you and everybody on Twitter.
There was always some kind of article being written about them or some tabloid bullshit being spewed. Sometimes it was just blatantly untrue. Not even just the stretched truth.
Yeah.
And that wore on her over time because that wasn't something that she was used to. Amy was painted as the gold-digging sugar baby who must have only been into Drew for his money. And Amy was frustrated reading such nasty and untrue things about her every time her name was printed because she worked really hard for her accomplishments. And before, when she'd see her name, it was actually for what she had done, and now it was for who she was dating. You know, she had worked hard, put herself through school, she networked, wrote a book, taught classes, lectured, did speaking engagements, podcasts, and now she'd been reduced to hot bimbo seeks millionaire's fortune.
Dr. Hot Bimbo to you, first of all.
They were forced into giving an exclusive interview with National Enquirer because they said if they didn't, they were going to run a different, far less favorable, and yes, untrue story that an ex-friend of Amy's had told them about, likely out of jealousy or whatever, you fill in the blank. So reluctantly, they came forward with their engagement long before they were ready to announce it to the world and told them about how they had flown to Paris where Drew had proposed and asked for her hand. And once the cat was out of the bag, it just seemed to get worse. And I'll be honest, like, there's very few people that if I saw a tabloid or an article with their name in it, I would click it because I just genuinely tend to not give a shit about most celebrities or most things. I've got enough going on in my own life, could give a shit less. And as much as I think Drew Carey's probably a great guy, I don't think that I'm clutching my pearls and running to the newspaper stand.
Yes.
Extra, read all about it. I don't know that I'm going to read all about it.
No, I might read the headline and move on, but I also was raised with enough information on how tabloids work to know that that ain't news, baby.
No, but I think that there are some people that see that and for whatever reason, and they have theirs and it makes money, whatever, and then their money's green and they love it and it sells. But some people love it and read it, and if they see Drew Carey's name, they are all over it, because I didn't really think that that would be the case, but some people are like, fucking Drew Carey.
Okay.
Oh, hell. And they gotta read
it.
You're
gonna come for my Drew Carey? I'm gonna come for you, bish.
And
rough.
She was shocked by how much, I mean, again, he's still an A-list celebrity. I mean, he's not. Yeah. I think he's bowed out of a lot of the, is he still doing The Prices Right? I don't know.
Who knows?
I think so. But it's not like he's exactly doing his stand-up shows anymore, or at least not that I'm seeing. He's not touring. He's not doing anything right. Like that. But different crowds, certain things that some are interested in wouldn't interest me. Things that I'm interested in that I would stop and read about, other people would walk right by.
Well, and I think that's the interesting part to me, right? Is I have literally zero skin in the race on what people are doing celebrity wise, they're dating, they're whatever. But beyond that, I think I don't know what it would take. I'd like to think nothing. I'm pretty sure nothing for me to get invested enough in a parasocial relationship the way that would be to like really truly do anything about it, to reach out, to say something, to tweet about it, to whatever. Like, it seems like a lot of effort for a very one-way relationship, you know?
Well, and things ended up getting worse for Amy because not only were people outwardly talking about how much they hated her, there was also a lot of, like, anonymous hate, too.
Yep.
And anonymous messages that she was getting. She was getting threats. She was getting messages that she couldn't prove, but she all but knew were from Gareth.
Yeah.
Which, and it had been, like, 7 years.
Yeah, man.
By now.
Come on.
6 or 7 years. But they were still kind of in the same circles enough where she could tell, and that was just really kind of freaking her out.
Is it wrong to imagine Gareth sort of like on his knees on his computer, like, what does Drew Carey have that I don't? And the answer is a lot.
The answer, first of all, is $165 million.
The second answer is a decent personality.
I mean, that's the answer number one, yeah. But I think actually the answer number two would be the successful stand-up comedy career you wanted so bad.
Ooh!
Ugh.
Yeah.
Stings,
Gareth,
don't it?
Sorry. Well, hey, they say comedy comes from great pain, so maybe he'll have a great stand-up in a minute.
But think about how bad that has to sting, because Gareth is a failed stand-up comedian, and now the love of his life, or the woman he wanted power over forever, and she took it away, she's now engaged to one of the most successful comedians of our lifetime.
Yikes. That's phenomenal.
But she's getting hate directly, but anonymously, and she's seeing her name slandered by tabloids and bullshit like that. And then one night, she's home alone at their shared home, and she saw somebody sneaking around their home. Ooh. Like, outside, not inside, thank God. But she understandably got scared.
Yeah.
And it all kind of became too much. She's like, I love Drew, but I can't stand the fame. I wish you weren't famous. I love you. I can't do this.
Right.
And she loved him, but she couldn't be with him.
Right.
So with breaking hearts, they broke up.
And that sucks because love is so much of a relationship, but it is not the only thing that needs to be there to have a successful life together.
Love's what's needed in the beginning. I think love is needed less and less.
Yeah.
As you go. It's still always needed, but it is so much more about everything else. And this, she couldn't take it. And yeah. It wasn't, again, I don't think she wanted to break up, but she's like, I cannot have, like, her business was suffering, everything that she had worked for, the mental duress, everything. And then, of course, that leads to them fighting. It's not like they're 100% perfect and it's, you know, just the two of us against the world. It causes problems in your relationship to have that kind of pressure, and pressure that you're not used to, and he's accustomed to it and he's older.
Right.
You know, he is very much used to it, and she is not.
Well, and he is older and more settled in his career as well, where,
and she's
negative
building hers.
Press isn't gonna make or break what you think about Drew Carey, because you know who Drew Carey is. It will make or break whether or not you go to someone to share your deepest insecurities and traumas and try to work on things with someone. Like, if I read that my therapist was Dr. Bimbo Gold Digger trying to get in Drew Carey's pants, I don't know how I'd feel about that. I don't know. I'm not there.
No.
So I completely understand that.
They ended their engagement. It was either late 2018 or maybe early 2019. I think it was 2018, but Drew said that he felt like a widower.
Oh.
Like he grieved this loss. He grieved this breakup. And Amy grieved it in her own way too, but she tried to focus on work and friends and friendships. And then we fast forward to January 2020.
Ooh.
Amy attended an awards event for an adult film company. And who would be one of the photographers but Gareth Pursehouse? The theory here is that he was still able to access her email and calendars and knew that she would be attending, or he could just see the list of right. attendees. I mean, it might not have been as deep as that, but regardless, the belief is that he was sure to get the gig because he knew she would be there.
Yes.
And as soon as he saw her, he made a huge scene in front of everybody.
Ew.
I mean, screaming at her, calling her names.
Ew!
And then, in this rage, you say ew to that, ready? He threw himself on the, like a child, threw himself on the ground and actually wound up in the fetal position, screaming and crying.
Como se dice, get a fucking grip?
Mm-hmm. With that, she kind of switched into therapist mode.
Yeah, as you do.
Not in, like, pissed off ex-girlfriend mode. She just tried to de-escalate and tried to calm him down, and he couldn't control himself. He screamed in her face, "You ruined my life." And I think eventually he calmed down. I don't really know how that resolved, but there was this after party that she was expected at, but she did not end up going because she didn't feel safe. She didn't know if he was gonna go to that after party, and
no, and
she
frankly,
didn't know what was gonna happen.
Who wants to go shake the damn ass after that? That's emotionally exhausting.
Not I. Amy was disheartened and alarmed to see just how affected Gareth still was about their breakup. I mean, still, it was, I mean, we're talking 8 years now. 8 years.
You know, that's enough time that every layer of your skin has regenerated. So it's like she never physically touched him at all, but apparently his brain was not on the same page.
Like, they'd been apart 4 times longer than they were ever together. That's a come on, man. Let it fucking go. He was just so obsessed, and it freaked her out to see just how still hateful he was.
Yeah.
So then we fast forward a couple of weeks later. It's January 30th, 2020. Gareth Pursehouse was chosen as a participant for a 1-minute skit on the Kill Tony podcast. Are you familiar with this?
I'm not, but so far, what a title.
Okay, so I wasn't either. This was my introduction to Kill Tony, and I watched like a couple of...
R.I.P. Tony, you would have loved Kill Tony.
I watched a couple of like little videos on it to try to get an understanding. So my understanding is Tony, the main dude, is like sits in a panel with other comedians. He's a comedian.
Okay.
And they're raunchy and
yeah,
gnarly, and it's funny, and they all make fun of each other, make fun of themselves, whatever, and in front of the crowd there are other people, other comedians in the crowd that put their names in for a drawing, basically.
Okay.
And they want to go up, and so if their name gets called, they get like a minute to okay. do something that they've got prepared.
Okay, so some sort of stand-up skit roast.
Yeah.
Thing.
So yeah. It ends up being this kind of like mutually beneficial thing where they can kind of do some material that they have. It's funny for the audience. It's funny for the panel. They get their first right. minute of their 15, maybe, and it kind of gets them started. So yeah.
That's cool.
But
okay.
it's supposed to be interactive with the audience, and the audience is supposed to laugh, whatever. So anyway, this was a complete and total fucking flop, and I wanted to play it for you.
Oh, yes.
So, without further ado, here is Gareth Pursehouse on Kill Tony.
Uh-oh, here he comes, everybody. It's a real human. Oh, that way, Gareth. Go back that way. It's dream. Dream, dream, dream. Here he is. One more time for Gareth, everybody. Come on.
Hello, everybody. All right, let me spin around this. There we go. Well, thank you very much. It's great to be here in all the best parts of entertainment. We've got most of a band. We've got morning radio sound effects. Sometimes a full band when a toy kazoo comes from the ground, raises from the grave, takes over Tony and starts singing. It's wonderful. It's a wonderful time. I think he froze. So back to popular... So over the summer, Trump yanked all the troops out of Syria, right? And then ISIS got loose. They're knocking on doors, running away or something like that. I don't know really how it works. And I thought he should have asked Tony that it's a bad idea because he has broke the bank relying on the pullout method. Quickest coming comedian in comedy? anyway, so I have bad news for the people, for the entertainers over there. Is that okay? Okay. Bad news for the entertainers over there. The best day of your career is going to be the days after you die, when like paintings skyrocket in price. Can I continue? Can I? It's close. It's
go ahead.
Okay.
Gareth. Go ahead.
The painting skyrocket in price. Redbox starts holding some movie from 1962. But what about the porn talent? What happens with them? Is it just Red Band at home singing, "She was so underappreciated in her time"?
All right. All right. There you go, Gareth. You did it. Doing the age-old broken method of trying to roast the people that the audience is here to see. That's good.
Oh, okay.
So, not very good.
I personally appreciate that I caught on to the fact that this panel of people would be a roast kind of comedy. I didn't think that somehow that would turn into advice that was retroactively given to this man to roast his own chance at success.
Yep.
Yet, here we are. Sorry.
Yeah. So, we've got that.
Embarrassing for me to watch.
It just sucks because, like, he gets up there and you can tell that he's nervous and then he's making fun of them, and like, it doesn't, if it landed well and he did a good job making fun of them, I think they would have all been on the floor.
Right.
But even like the main guy, Tony, that you can hear him, he's like, make fun of the ones everyone in the room is here to see, is what he
yeah.
said. He's just like, don't open with that. You got 1 minute.
You get 1 minute. You went over your minute.
And you did a shit job.
And it wasn't well rehearsed.
No.
And I think, I am no comedian, as you all know, okay?
I think you are.
I love comedy, though. I have sort of a weird spot in my heart also for memoirs, which is not always helpful.
Mm-hmm.
Like, comedians do write a shocking amount of memoirs, and they're not, like, they're usually intentionally not funny. It's like, this is how I can talk about the things that I otherwise can't say without cracking a joke.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, I think from all of those, and even just from personal experiences with storytelling, practice is key, my man. If you're going to get up on something that's big like that, that's intended to give you a minute to showcase what you can do,
don't change it before you get on stage.
Don't change it before you get on stage. And I don't know, run it a time or two.
He was messing up. But again, it's not, there's a difference between nervous and then just like, not having given a shit.
Right.
Messing up and insulting everybody in the room. And I think that's what he did. And it rubbed everyone the wrong way. So anyway, those are the kinds of things he did on stage.
Okay.
So he didn't do so great. So that was late January 2020. So we're going to fast forward to a couple days before Valentine's Day.
Oy vey.
Also in 2020. Amy texted Drew asking if they could get together and talk. Remember, It has been over a year since they've had any contact.
Oh, any contact at all?
Yeah, they really
had a clean break.
Yeah, I mean, they've really not talked. They've broken up, and Drew was over the moon.
Aww.
He said, absolutely, I'd love to. I love you. But they didn't get the chance.
Aww.
On Valentine's Day, February 14th, Amy went on a hike with her friend Cleopatra. They got coffee. They reflected on life and how things were going.
That sounds like a great time.
Amy wore a red cardigan in honor of Valentine's Day.
Cute.
Amy told Cleopatra that she was happy. Really, really happy and proud of what she'd accomplished this far. That evening, Amy went out with some girlfriends. It was more of like a Galentine's Day because like, they were single. And again, this was 2020 before the world shut down. And
right, we were before all, the world shut down.
I know,
down.
We were all stuck inside. So
T-minus a few weeks.
Kind of remember that. But Amy was dressed in this velvet, skin-tight nude dress, wearing her rosary bead necklace, boots, and a leather jacket.
That sounds so hot and like the worst sensory ick I've ever heard of. Velvet is my personal nightmare, but phenomenal.
Her hair and makeup were done beautifully. And she went to a burlesque show with friends to support another of their friends who was performing.
Oh, cute.
The friend who was performing, I don't know if it's just her stage name, but anything I saw was Miss Tosh, so I'll call her that. But she said that while she was on stage, she could see Amy and their other friends just standing and cheering her on, just really showing up for her, and it made her really happy. The last photo of Amy Harwick was taken in the lobby of that theater after that show.
Wow.
Where she was invited to the after party, but opted out to go have tea with friends instead.
Cute.
She did that, and then she headed home. And once there, when she parked her car, she sent a text to one of the friends to ask if she could be sent the photos from that night.
Yeah.
Amy's friend Sarah did end up sending them to her, but Amy never got to see them.
Oh.
So Amy pulled into her driveway around 1 a.m., so it was technically February 15th, and headed up to the third floor bedroom of her apartment.
Third floor. Okay, yeah.
Her roommate, Michael Herman, was asleep in his room on the first floor. When Amy got upstairs, she was viciously attacked. Michael woke up to the sound of her screams. He heard bodies hitting the floor upstairs, and then he heard her screams muffled, as if her attacker covered her mouth with something.
Oh.
Michael couldn't find his phone, and he tried yelling to scare away the attacker, but the attack continued, and he didn't know what to do, so he hopped a fence, but he cut himself on the way down. He ran to his neighbor's house and began pounding on the door, but no one answered.
Oh.
And I mean, really, would you? If a bleeding guy starts pounding on your door at 1 a.m., are you answering? Because I'm not.
Not with the screaming that I'm hearing from next door.
And, I mean, I'll call the police for him.
Oh, yeah.
But I'm not
opening up.
There is quite literally nothing I can do to help you, sir. I am 5 feet tall. What is it that you need? But anyway, he ran across the street to a different house, and then it happened again. He banged on the door, nobody, whatever. And then he happened to see somebody walking down the street, and luckily that person didn't turn around and run away from the guy who was bleeding and running frantically at him, but instead agreed to call for help.
Oh.
So between Amy getting home and being attacked, and the call being placed in 911, 14 minutes went by.
That is so fast.
So she got home, parked her car, went into the house to the call to 911, 14 minutes.
Wow.
Those 14 minutes could have made a difference. When they arrived, and they got there quick, they found Amy on the ground below her third story balcony.
Oh.
She had fallen 20 feet and was clinging to life. At 2:05 a.m., Amy's friend Sarah texted her the photos that she'd asked for.
Wow.
But at 3:26 a.m., Amy was pronounced dead.
That's so awful. I wonder who it could be. Who has a motive? Who has the means? Who could possibly know where she was?
The investigation into Amy's murder began immediately.
Yeah. Because that was not natural causes.
No. This was not a slip and fall.
Nope.
With Michael's statement and the evidence available at the scene and on her body, they got moving. The room was a mess. Obviously, the attack was isolated to this room and the balcony. The rosary necklace that she had worn that night out was broken, and the beads had been strewn about.
It feels cinematic.
They found a syringe with an orangey brown liquid inside.
Ooh, I hate that.
At first glance, they thought it was heroin, which was incredibly strange because Amy did not use drugs and she didn't drink and she really didn't, I mean, she didn't do any of those things. But when they tested it, it turns out that the syringe was actually filled with liquid nicotine, which I didn't know you could get that, but if injected, especially at that amount, it was a lethal amount. When nicotine goes into the body other ways, like when you inhale it orally or you it's absorbed through the skin or anything else in small doses, it's fine, obviously. But when it's injected into the bloodstream and a syringe full of it, that is lethal. That will kill you in a matter of minutes. And they believe that her attacker brought this with them.
Oh.
Amy had marks on her neck consistent with strangulation, along with broken bones in her neck.
Well, and we've talked, but anything that's that hands-on is personal and intense. It is not a passive or an accidental thing.
Oh, yes. There was blood all over the place. She had self-defense marks on her hands, but ultimately, her most severe injuries were sustained in the fall from the balcony, resulting in the blunt force trauma to her head and torso that ultimately killed her.
Oh.
Michael said he had woken up hours before the struggle to the sound of a plate breaking. He assumed it was Amy and didn't think much else and went back to sleep. But it's believed that the attacker had actually gained entry via breaking a French door, and the sound he heard was actually the shattering of the glass and not a plate, but Michael had no way of knowing that.
Oh.
They also noticed that Amy's bed wasn't made, and it looked like someone had been laying in it.
Ew.
And they learned later that it was likely her attacker who had laid down in her bed while he waited. For hours.
Nasty.
When her friends were interviewed, every single one of them pointed to Gareth Pursehouse. They outlined Amy's fear of him, his history of violence and obsession toward her. Amy had actually had no contact orders against him in the past. They had lapsed. Yeah. But she had actually had two protective orders against him in the past. Those were brought up to them immediately. They talked about how Amy believed that he had broken into her house before. That Amy believed that she was being surveilled in some way because right. of his experience with computers. Even his recent outburst at the awards show that at this point was like weeks beforehand. And just how afraid she was of him. She was writing emails to herself in the weeks leading up to her death, outlining her run-ins to him, saying, if anything happens to me, it's him, telling her friends that,
holy cow,
if anything happens to me, it is him. She shared her location on her phone with a friend so that her friend would know where she was. She bought pepper spray for the first time. She never had it. She was taking these measures. She was trying to up the security system in her house. I just don't think she'd had a chance yet.
Right.
Like, she was in the process of doing those things. Like, she was taking all of the steps. She was doing all of the things that you are supposed to do, and still this happened. She could sense that. When he was interviewed, when Gareth was, he was very shady. He was nervous, secretive, dishonest.
And did he vomit that too?
Of course he did. He had scratch marks, a black eye, and a bite mark believed to be from Amy fighting for her life.
No, it was, you know, when detectives, they try to bite your arm because they're so desperate.
You ever see that? Do I have enough time? Do I?
Yeah, wrap it up.
For the sake of being thorough, though, because if I were listening to this, I'd want you to tell me about it, because I'd say, okay, well, what about the roommate? What about this? What about that?
Right.
In terms of the roommate, Michael was checked out too. He was seen on neighbors' Ring doorbell cameras desperately pleading for help. So when he was banging on everything, this is when the attack was ongoing.
Right.
So he was not at the scene.
It's hard to push someone off a balcony if you're at the neighbor's house.
Correct. He was ruled out. Drew Carey was also interviewed. The two had shared texts just days before Valentine's Day, making plans to get together. They essentially, it seemed like, could have potentially rekindled something.
Ooh.
And or like they were going to, and then she's dead, so you don't talk in over a year, and then you do, and then she dies. That's suspicious.
And that also sucks.
Yep. But he had an airtight alibi, no violent history, and I mean he wasn't anywhere near her. And
well, and once again, I bring up motive and means.
Correct.
Why?
There was one person who had violently assaulted Amy before. There was one person that for a decade didn't leave her alone.
Mm-hmm.
There was one person that she had sought legal protection from. There was one person that she told her friends and family that she was afraid of. There was one person she sent emails to herself about. And the manner of her murder was so personal, so rageful, so angry, that her attacker broke into her home and waited.
In her fucking bed.
In her bed. Waited in her room, waited in her bed, meant to kill her and then had the strength to throw her after trying to strangle her, throw her over a balcony 20 feet down to concrete.
Goodness.
Horrible. I won't spend too much time on the court case, but I will say this. Gareth Pursehouse was arrested shortly after, obviously.
Bless
and
up.
Charged with, like, residential burglary and all this, but of course the first-degree murder with the special circumstance charge of lying in wait, which I didn't know was a thing in California.
Ooh,
so that's cool.
Love that.
It took jurors 2 days to find him guilty.
Wow.
And of course, all of this stuff happened over COVID, so, you know, she was murdered February 15th, 2020. And
the world
then
shut down
it, almost to the day, a month later, the world shut down. So I can imagine how many times his court dates were kicked out. But actually, it was December of last year, December 2023.
Wow.
He was sentenced. So that took this long for all of this to happen. But obviously, I mean, you, me, and everybody else know it was him.
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
But he was sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole.
Yay.
So he cannot hurt anybody else.
I heart LWAPs.
But I want to focus on the aftermath, and we still have a few pages to go.
Oh, shit.
Following Gareth's conviction, Tony Hinchcliffe, so the Tony from the Kill Tony podcast that you heard earlier, had this to say. Quote, "Most people come on the show and they use it as an opportunity to really show things that they've prepared and worked on.
Uh-huh.
And in the interview, we find out more about them, and they have the opportunity to really show their more likable side. With this guy, it was quite the opposite. He came on and burnt bridges right out of the gate. It's very telling when someone comes up and tries to make fun of the people the entire room is there to see, especially when it's not prepared. You can really tell when someone has a dark side and how they treat an opportunity like that. So yeah, I wasn't surprised when I found out this about him."
Wow.
He also compared Gareth to American Psycho.
Oh.
So.
Love that.
You know, not a compliment.
So, no, but it seems apt.
Well, I don't disagree. So many people were impacted by Amy's death. Her family were heartbroken, absolutely distraught. They all lived on the East Coast, so imagine their horror when they found out over the phone that their daughter was violently murdered after a night out with friends, and they live on the opposite side of the country in a different time zone.
Yeah.
The helplessness that I imagine you feel. They'll never be the same. Her friends were haunted by the similarities and irony. I don't know if that's the right word, but Amy was fascinated by the creepy, macabre things and also true crime.
Mm-hmm.
And she'd actually recently purchased one of Sharon Tate's bras.
What?
Yeah, you know, so the Manson. Yeah. So, very, I mean, that is wild. She was a collector. I mean, she had like bookcases and like glass cases in her home. She had things in jars and all different stuff. But then she also had Sharon Tate's bra.
Hmm.
And she was very interested in the Black Dahlia case. And there was this weird similarity that she was interested in these true crime cases that revolved around these famous people or became famous because they happened in LA, right? In the Black Dahlia and Sharon Tate, when you have like this Hollywood-esque aspect to it, whether it's because it happened there or because of the victim's status.
Right.
They're like, she was so into that and then she became one.
Yeah, that is not the self-actualizing I think she was trying to do.
No.
No.
Her friends were just as heartbroken as her family.
Of course.
They were her chosen family. Her friend Robert Koshland said, "It's like the sun was ripped out from the sky."
Oh, shut up. That's going to make me cry.
Heartbreaking and devastating. That same friend Rudy Torres said, "I may have lost a friend, and a lot of us lost a friend, but she was en route to just help so many people. In her chosen field, she helped so many women, and she would have helped so many more. It's more than just losing a friend."
Ugh.
Together with her family, her friends organized the Dr. Amy Harwick Memorial which we will have linked.
Awesome.
Drew Carey took a week off from work from The Price is Right.
As he should.
He grieved. He wanted to rekindle their relationship. He'd have gotten back together with her in a heartbeat if he could have. And just days before she died, when he got that text from her after they hadn't spoken in months, there was a spark. There was hope. Right. And then 48 hours later, she was dead. He said, "You want an intimate relationship where you can open up to somebody completely. And she was that for me."
Aww.
In a statement, he said, "Amy and I had a love that people are lucky to have once in a lifetime. She was a positive force in the world, a tireless and unapologetic champion for women, and passionate about her work as a therapist."
Wow.
Let's remember, though, this is February 2020, weeks before the COVID lockdown, and Dr. Amy Harwick provided valuable therapy to many people. Many people who needed it then and would likely grow to need it even more during lockdowns, mandates, and quarantines, and the stress of thinking that we were all going to die or our loved ones would, and we were staying away from all of our loved ones and we didn't travel to see them. I don't need to remind you, you lived it too. And 20 years from now, when there's a generation that didn't, and then like movies and TV shows about it, we can all like sigh and wag our fingers at it together. But until then, it's just going to get a couple of sentences from me, okay? I'm not going to say the C word again. But regardless, what we do know for a fact was that statistically, domestic violence instances increased a lot due to lockdowns because abusers and victims were stuck at home together. And that was a breeding ground for escalation. And there was little to no way for a survivor to make moves to get out.
No.
Amy was an asset to many of her patients who were dealing with just this, and now she was gone. And not only was she gone, but she was murdered in the way that many of those same women were afraid was going to happen to them.
Right.
So it was almost like, in a way, this traumatized them. And not only did they lose one of their supports, but they lost their supports in one of the ways that they feared the most.
Right.
Model Emily Sears made a statement on Instagram, and I'm going to read it to you. It's kind of lengthy, but I think it's important. I'm not familiar with her, but she was actually one of Dr. Amy Harwick's patients.
Wow. Okay.
She wrote, quote, "Like so many of us right now, I'm thinking about Amy with a mixture of sadness and anger. Nobody ever deserves this, but particularly someone who dedicated her life to helping survivors overcome the trauma and fears that come with living in a world where sexual assault and domestic abuse are normal. Amy was my therapist, and she helped me heal so many wounds from my past and guide me to having healthier relationships with both myself and others. I never could have imagined in all of my sessions we had, telling her about my fears of this happening to me, that this would end up happening to her."
Wow.
When she was the resource for so many of us, how do we process this? Someone like her, with so much knowledge and expertise on these issues, was still a victim herself and was killed by her ex-boyfriend. None of us are safe, and it's unfair. She did not deserve this. All she wanted to do was help people. She genuinely changed my life, and I know so many of my friends were also changed by having known Amy as either clients or close friends of hers. My heart goes out to her family. She will be missed for so many reasons. Rest in peace.
Wow. What an impact.
The impacts of Amy dying, Amy's murder, reached so much more than just Amy. And one of the reasons I wanted to cover Amy's case is that even though Amy was an incredibly educated, knowledgeable woman who was not only trained in identifying problematic behavior and patterns in relationships, but she also had a private practice and worked with clients to help them do it too, it didn't mean that she came with this force field around her that made her untouchable.
Right.
You can know all of the things, and it isn't a shield. Amy counseled survivors of domestic violence, and in the end, she was still a victim. And I don't say this to blame her.
No.
Just the opposite. That even though she knew this, he was still determined to cause harm to her, and he was hell-bent on doing so. He broke into her home, and he waited for hours for his attack. When was the last time you waited in silence for hours to do something?
Never.
That's one.
I've never been quiet. And I hate waiting.
It's one hell of an opportunity to reconsider and walk out. But he didn't. Amy unknowingly walked into her home for the last time because an obsessed ex-boyfriend couldn't handle the word no. And it's not lost on me that there's some symbolism in choosing Valentine's Day, of all days, to commit this murder. And further, isn't it also interesting that it was Valentine's Day episode of The Price is Right that Drew Carey introduced Amy as his fiancée?
There's lots of ties.
I think that there was a lot of forethought on Gareth's part, and he felt entitled to Amy and seemed to self-destruct and lash out at rejection. But we need to consider what we can learn. If you hear a noise in your home, even if you're half asleep, and even if you think it can simply be explained away, maybe it's worth investigating.
Yeah.
Is it likely a broken plate in the middle of the night? Maybe it is, but maybe it's a broken window. Home security, something like Simply Safe, hey, sponsor us, or a Ring doorbell system, or any other of the things. I mean, there are so many different versions now, and many of them aren't ridiculously expensive, but they exist now. And if it's something that you need to budget for, in my opinion, security is something worth working into my Excel sheet and finding the money for.
Yeah.
Cameras on entry points on the first floor windows, have the feed linked to an app on your phone and notifications turned on. The worst thing that can happen is that you are annoyed with your phone going off, but personally, I'd rather be annoyed than dead.
Yeah, and my latte budget doesn't matter if I'm dead.
We're going to include domestic violence resources as well as resources for looking for mental health counseling and more about sex therapy if you're interested. I'm also going to include the Amy Harwick Memorial Fund should you be interested in checking it out or even donating. I truly believe Amy would want her case talked about. I think she especially would want as many women as possible to hear what she endured and to come out the other side more diligent, more vigilant, more attentive. And I hope that's what you all listening take away from this. So that was the murder of Dr. Amy Harwick.
Amy sounds like such a badass woman, but also just someone like I want to take a long car trip with and have an affogato with at the end. You know?
What?
An affogato?
What's that?
It's like like a root beer float.
Yeah.
It's ice cream with a shot of espresso.
I love that.
Uh-huh.
Ooh.
Right?
Stunning. I want one.
Amazing. But no, she sounds just like the kind of person that the world needs more of. And what a fucking shame that someone who could have seen all of those good things and the delightfulness that she brought not only to her personal relationships, but also to the world, is also the same person that is responsible for ending her life.
But also the way that just because you, and this isn't a slight at Amy, again, the opposite, but just because you have letters after your name, I don't care how many years you go to school for, I don't care how many years you work in the field, it doesn't mean that you've got this, like, foolproof bullshit detector, or that you are immune from being abused. It doesn't mean that you...
No one's infallible.
Yeah, that you cannot be in a relationship like that. So at the same time that she is guiding patients, other women in her office, and helping them in their own domestic violence situations,
yeah,
she's covering her own bruises.
Well,
and there is something so haunting in that she could be such an amazing outlet and resource for so many other people. And not just be a resource or be an outlet, but be an incredible one at
right.
that. But also be in the throes of her own, battle with that at the time. And again, we're talking a decade before this. She wasn't the sex therapist yet that she
right.
is. But
to have gone through it.
Yeah, and to have actively been going through it. He never gave up. They were broken up nearly a decade.
Yeah.
And he didn't let go. And the the skit you heard him and the little mini interview afterwards. And if you want to watch the whole video, I mean, you certainly can if you want to. We'll have it linked in the sources and everything, but you can certainly just Google it. It's
not hard to find.
No, type in Gareth Perth's house and kill Tony and you'll find 10 different versions of it. But, you know, that video of him speaking is 2 weeks before he killed her. 2 weeks.
Wow.
He was on that stage.
2 weeks.
2 weeks.
Well, and I think...
That was January 30th, 2020. He killed her...
Shit.
...the evening between the 14th and the 15th. So, he broke into her house probably late on Valentine's Day waiting for her to come home.
Oh, yeah.
So, 2 weeks.
I feel like... This is a really good example of a few things. One, there's a type of person, and I'm inclined to say a type of man, but I feel like that might be a little too narrow. So a type of person who is so desperate to be good at something they're not, that won't let it go. And I think that trait follows to other things.
Yeah, it's like if I wanted to play basketball...
You'd be really great at basketball in a kids' league.
Hell yeah, I'd be dunking on all those little shits.
Yeah,
but
you'd be terrible in the WNBA.
But against anybody else, literally, even middle schoolers.
Yep.
Hell no. But that's the, you know what I mean? And sometimes there's a strength in recognizing what is your strength and what isn't.
And that's, I think that's what I mean.
But that's, his confidence might have been little, but his ego was...
Right. So
enormous.
Enormous, but also fragile. And that, I think, is the thing. The strength that comes from recognizing when something should be your pursuit versus a passion versus a hobby.
Mm-hmm.
And they can overlap. They can not overlap at all, but they are different things. The strength that comes from figuring that out is less of a strength in, like, look what I can do, and more of a strength in, look what I can do, and also, it doesn't have to be the only thing about you. Your one ex does not have to be the only person in the world. Your one hope and career choice doesn't have to be the thing you do.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's very notable, at least, and maybe this is just like the neurodivergence in me and the learning to mask around different people, but it feels so blatantly obvious to me when someone's entirety rests on your opinion.
Yep.
And that, A, it's sad. And not sad and like, ew, pathetic. It's sad as in like, that is sad. Like, you have no input on how you feel about yourself. Like, you are basing this all off of other people.
I know.
Like, I mean, not, the
it's too bad.
It's also not lost on me that he needed to be seeing a therapist like Amy.
Yeah.
But also, this is why, and this is a slightly less but equally real note, this is why so many women would rather choose the bear in the middle of the woods.
He's just, this man was so abusive and so flawed and entitled and did not accept, he just couldn't accept rejection or whatever. And I think every time he saw her doing well,
it was, and like she a was slap in the face,
and she yeah. was, I mean, she had her fire eating act and she had her dancing and she had her bartending on the side, and that was just on the side. She paid fat stacks cash for her school,
which is nuts,
which is incredible. And I'm talking, like, not fat stacks of cash back in the 40s.
Nope.
Which, hey, would have been a feat in and of itself. I'm not saying that. But I'm saying with the percentage of what you make to what it costs and what it is now is something
right.
unreal. And, yeah, to be able to do that, that's life-changing. That's incredible. And I'm sure he's there, like, I mean, hey, I don't think he was doing terribly working in tech, but
no,
and being a photographer, I mean, I think he split his time pretty well between the two. I think he got a lot of exposure and with his photography,
but
oh, I didn't even hear that. Okay. Yeah, sure. But I don't know. Either way, I think he's a complete and total fucking putz.
Yeah.
And I think he...
And you know what? I'm going to say this.
Should stub his toe every day.
I hope he prematurely balds.
Oh, I mean, for sure. But he's also in prison.
And I say that for
a
deep cut. Like, I feel like he is the kind of man that would lose his shit if he prematurely balded. Which is hard because a lot of people can look really good with it. I hope he's got a weird shaped scalp and I hope he prematurely balds.
Oh, if you look him up in his court stuff, not that it's funny, but you should look up what he looked like in 2020 and you should look up what he looked like in 23. That's all I'm saying.
Okay.
That's all I'm saying. I'm not here to throw shade. I'm just here to call out the facts.
Why?
What do you see, ma'am?
I see, like, if Syndrome from The Incredibles came to life and then cosplayed as like a butch lesbian.
Yep.
Yeah.
As like Boo from
Monsters Inc.
Fuck. No. Well, no, I was
I was like, that seems too nice.
No. I was thinking Orange is the New Black.
Yeah. Yep.
But
well, and it's just...
He's just a scroat. Look at him.
Yeah, it's not great. And I know he's trying to do the whole Clark Kent thing, but it's not working.
Well, I hope that he never has any fun and he's not having a Baja Blast.
No. I hope he's straight up not having a good time, dog.
Yeah.
Wow.
He looks like he aged like 10 years.
Yeah. And
not in a good way. Not like he aged like fine wine. Like he aged
like milk.
He aged like fucking old yogurt.
He aged like that Starbucks remnants that you have in the cup holder before you realize how bad it's gotten and have to throw it out.
And you're like, dear God, there's so many separated layers here. Like his collar, I don't know.
Anyway. Ooh.
You owe me a Coke. I would like you all to let us know what you think of this episode.
Hell yeah.
You can do that on our Instagram page or our email. But Abby, if they wanted to reach out to us on Instagram, where would they go?
So you could reach out to us, see the people, the places, the things, see our resources, get links to our sources sometimes, see everything you want and more, including pod pets, babe. But send them too. At our Instagram, and you would find that by putting in the little search bubble at About Time for True Crime Pod with periods in between every word. So that is ABOUT period TIME period FOR period TRUE period CRIME period POD because podcast was too long. But if you, much like the name Gareth Pursehouse, wanted to send something too long, you could email us. But Allie, where would they email us at?
If you wanted to email us anything, like your thoughts on this case or a case recommendation, or you wanted to say, hey, I heard the episode and I like it. First of all, I would probably cry because thank you. I worked really hard on it. or send your pod pets or whatever. You just want to say hi. I don't know. I'm not you. But if you want to do any of those things, we'd love that. And you could email that to us to abouttime4tc@gmail.com. ABOUTTIME numeric 4TC at gmail.com. We love you and we love to see you. And if I take a gander at my watch, I would say that I think you should also download, rate, review, tell a friend. And if I look back at my watch, I would say that that was
about time for true crime.
Bye.
Hey.
I know.